this plan is far-reaching. It touches everything from second chances, the agricultural sector, to even the Federal Reserve. It's a visionary plan, and it reflects Joe Biden's commitment to closing the wealth gap for Black and brown communities.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care. In this episode, we co-hosted a briefing with Small Business for America's Future and the Biden for President campaign. Senior Policy Advisor Seema Sadanandan and Jason Rodriguez, Deputy National Coalitions Director, discussed Vice President Biden's plan for advancing racial equity in America. They answered questions from our network about access to capital for small businesses, reforms to the PPP loan program, fair mortgage practices, and equal sentencing. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Rhett Buttle with Small Business for America's Future. Jim Doyle of Business Forward and I are pleased to host the Biden for President team, Jason Rodriguez, Deputy National Coalition Director, and Seema, Senior Policy Advisor. We've asked Seema to discuss Vice President Biden's plan for advancing racial equity in America. We've also asked Jason and Seema to discuss the campaign's policy development process. Jason and Seema, we really appreciate you joining us today. And with that, Jason, we'll kick the call over to you.
Thanks, Rhett. Thank you so much for your partnership and your leadership on all of these issues. And Jim Doyle, to you and the folks at Business Forward for continuing to partner with us in a series of Build Back Better policy discussions that we have done in partnership with Rhett, Jim, and the folks at Business Forward. This is an important organizing opportunity for us as a campaign to really just hone in on some of the inequities that exist around not only President Trump's response to COVID, but certainly larger systemic inequities that exist in our economic system. And certainly, this is an opportunity for us to continue to uplift a lot of the challenges that the small business community is facing in this moment. We are excited here to continue to organize the small business community and engage in a thoughtful way as part of the coalition's program on the Joe Biden campaign. And with that, you know, really just want to take the moment to really uplift just some of the things that we are doing here. One is that we are working with folks like Jim and Rhett to put together a council of partners to continue to feedback information and thoughts that folks have around some of these plans. So thank you for continuing to send your thoughts our way. That is super, super helpful. We're going to continue to put together small business roundtables across our battleground states as an organizing opportunity to really hone in on some of these issues and localize these discussions. So I want to thank you all for those of you that are partnering with us on those. And I also want to just encourage folks, if you are interested in learning more about Joe Biden's proposals to support the small business community, please do visit and sign up at joebiden.com/small businesses. It is important that you engage with our campaign. We very much value the work that you all are doing in the private sector, especially during this time. So with that, I'll turn it over to my incredible colleague and partner in a lot of this work, Seema, to walk us through the Vice President's racial equity plan. Seema?
Hi, thank you so much for including me in this conversation. It is really exciting to talk to small businesses across the country, really the backbone of our economy. And we are in times that require us to not just make the investment into getting us back to where we were, but to build back a better economic future for our entire country. And that's all about what the Build Back Better plan is really focused on. The first pillar of the plan really looks at mobilizing American manufacturing and innovation to ensure that the future is made in America, and it includes all of America. The second pillar of the plan was about mobilizing American ingenuity to build the modern infrastructure that we need and a clean energy future all at the same time. In the third pillar of Build Back Better, we focus on a 21st century caregiving and education workforce. And never has it been more apparent or important that we engage a vision for that future. And the final pillar of Build Back Better was about racial equity, but really racial equity is a guiding principle for Joe Biden, and it infuses everything we do and every policy we do. We're thinking about how do we begin to build, elevate equality, but how do we also take a look at equity and really closing the gaps in terms of racial disparities and other types of disparities that exist across our economy. I'll tell you that there's so much in this plan. There's so much that is embodied from prior plans, but there's so much that is new, whether it's a dramatic expansion of access to capital, and particularly looking at increasing the availability of venture capital investments for small businesses, especially those owned by Black and Brown people, expanding lending to the expanded Small Business Opportunity Fund, creating a national network of federally funded small business incubators and innovation hubs, seeding intensive semester-long business development programs. There's so much here. I won't go through all of it. I'll just say that we paid attention to the need for capital, and we listened to small business owners when they said sometimes that capital isn't available to us through the larger banks. So that's why we made it a point to invest in CDFIs and to empower the MBDA to do more than what it's been able to do and to even do lending. And we wanted to make sure that the technical assistance was there to support small businesses. This plan is far-reaching. It touches everything from second chances, the agricultural sector, to even the Federal Reserve. It's a visionary plan, and it reflects Joe Biden's commitment to closing the wealth gap for Black and Brown communities. I'll stop right there and turn it back over to our host.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that, Seema. We've got a number of questions already about access to capital, and because there are so many, what I'm going to try to do, Seema, is just read a few of them because they complement each other, I think, pretty well. Question from VR Small, Veteran Women's Enterprise Center in Dallas, Texas. How do you plan to address the continued lack of access to capital for many minority women and veteran-owned community-based businesses struggling to survive? Next question is from Antoine Thompson, National Association of Real Estate Brokers. What are the plans to increase the number of Black CDFIs and Black credit unions in the U.S.? Patricia McGowan of the McGowan Company in Richmond, Virginia asks, what directives will be put in place to address the institutional racism and lending practices Blacks face when attempting to secure a mortgage or small business loans? So let's put aside the mortgages because that's a separate section, but just a number of people asking about access to capital for minority-owned businesses. What more can you tell us about the Biden plan?
Yes, access to capital for minority-owned businesses was something we paid quite a bit of attention to. CDFIs have been on the front lines of the battle to close the racial wealth gap for many years. And that's why Joe Biden, as president, is going to seek to expand the role of CDFIs in underserved communities around the country by doubling their direct funding and making them the top vehicle for funding from the Small Business Opportunity Fund. So we're looking to expand their capacity to both offer microloans and also to start startups and larger loans to existing small businesses who have the capacity to grow. And Joe Biden will use that Small Business Opportunity Fund to strengthen the CDFI stability and lending ability through targeted policies, very similar to those that were proposed in the Jobs and Neighborhood Investment Act. So the idea that CDFIs have been integral to providing that opportunity for small businesses was something we paid quite a bit of attention to. The other thing that I'll say is that programs that have been in place and that have been really focused, like the 8A program, and attempted to create that opportunity for small businesses, those long-term technical assistance programs that help small businesses gain access to federal contracting is something that we know works. In fact, in 2019 alone, 8A firms won $30 billion in federal contracts. as President Joe Biden will triple the federal goal for contracting with small disadvantaged businesses from 5 to 15% of all federal procurement dollars by 2025. And he's going to increase that program's administrative capacity to bolster marketing of the program in Black and Brown communities and tribal lands and streamline the application process, including creating a national standard for service delivery. So what that means is that AA program is an on-ramp for small businesses to be able to get access to these federal dollars and federal contracts. And so we want to expand that program and strengthen its ability to provide the technical assistance to small businesses.
The next question, it relates to home ownership. It's from James Prevett, National Association of Real Estate Brokers in Maryland. How does the Vice President plan to address the home ownership gap between Black and white communities?
There is so much that we are doing in terms of looking at home ownership. You know, for many generations, home ownership has been a site and a way that communities could really gain access to the American dream. And just to highlight a couple of the things that we're doing, not to mention the $15,000 advanceable tax credit for new homeowners. Joe Biden is also calling for a more accurate, non-discriminatory, inclusive credit scoring system and creating a public credit reporting agency. Having access to a fairly determined credit score is so important for Black and Brown communities to be able to obtain that mortgage and that loan to buy their first home. And so what we've seen is that today credit scoring and reports are oftentimes leaving many credit invisible because the sources that should and can be used to generate a credit score aren't used. And that contributes to the racial disparities that we see. And that's why Joe Biden will create a new public credit score and scoring division within the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that will provide consumers with a government option that seeks to minimize racial disparities. For example, by ensuring that the algorithms that are being used for those credit scores don't have a discriminatory impact, and accepting non-traditional sources of data like rental history and utility bills to establish credit. And that's just one example, but there's so much in terms of this vision for housing, in terms of creating incentives, spurring the construction of 1.5 million homes and public housing units to address affordable housing crisis. So from helping families get the opportunity to scale up the support for investing in home ownership in revitalization areas and giving them tax credits to really putting a focus on making sure that there's affordable housing for everyone to looking at credit scores. There is so much in this plan for communities of color to help them take that step towards the American dream of owning a home.
We have a number of questions on criminal justice. I'll pick two. The first is Leslie Vincent from Sarasota, Florida, asks, as president, what actions will you take to reverse the unjust mass incarceration of African Americans and to restore their voting rights once released? Rick Jones, Tracy's Stay and Play in Griffin, Georgia, asks, what would you do as our president to make sure there is equality in the judicial system as far as sentencing for African Americans? We all know that African Americans get sentenced twice as many years as white men for the same crime. How do we fix this for equality?
I appreciate that question. That's a great question. Criminal justice has had such a profound impact on communities of color, and their disparate representation in that system has created cycles of disenfranchisement, whether it comes to the ability to get a job once you have a criminal record or obtain housing or even a loan. There is so many collateral consequences that nationwide, some estimates suggest that there are tens of thousands of collateral consequences to having a criminal record. And that's why, as a part of the fourth plank of Build Back Better, we are seeking to help states move forward with automated record sealing. And this is critically important because of those collateral consequences that I mentioned, and even the consequence of voting. When you look at states across the country, oftentimes the data information systems that they rely on in order to track who has a criminal record and when their sentence is complete is outdated. In some instances, it may even be paperwork in courthouses. And so states need that incentive to have that data information infrastructure. And Joe Biden has pledged that as president, he will make that investment to states that are willing to take that step and really help them build out that information infrastructure so that they can begin to automate the process of record stealing, so that individuals who have had a criminal record, and this disparately impacts people of color, as I mentioned, that they'll have that opportunity to get that record seal and to be able to re-enter and be a part of society again in their full capacity, unleashing an incredible amount of potential back into our economy and to our society at large.
We have a question from Lisa Gomez from San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, San Antonio, Texas. She's got two questions, and I'll ask them both at the same time, if that's okay. First, it relates to PPP. The question is, when the PPP was rolled out, we learned that many small women minority-owned businesses could not access the funds due to lack of relationships with financial institutions. Do you have a plan to encourage banks and financial institutions to be more intentional about establishing solid relationships with women and minority-owned businesses? Just as a side note, we polled our network of business leaders, Seema, and Lisa Gomez's experience is consistent with many of the women and small minority-owned businesses with which we work. The second question from Lisa is, in general, the pandemic has displaced many entry-level, low-wage workers and increased the need for more technical skills in the workplace. How will you ensure that displaced workers get the support they need to reskill for new careers, and how will you support businesses that have to train and upskill incumbent employees? So I'm sorry to stack two very different questions, but it's from the same person. So the first one is, how do we fix PPP? And the next one is about worker training.
Two incredibly important questions and really get to the heart of a lot of the complex problems that we're really trying to solve here. When it comes to PPP, I'll say absolutely we want to ensure that all small business relief efforts are specifically designed to aid businesses owned by Black and Brown people. What Trump did is that he designed PPP to allow the largest banks to give their most well-off clients essentially concierge service at the front of the line while closing the door on Black, Latino, AAPI, and Native American-owned businesses that did not have those deep relationships with those banks. As President Joe Biden is committed to ensuring that from the start, any emergency small business relief plan that will be seeded after January 2021 will have clear provisions to ensure that true small businesses, especially those owned by Black and Brown people and those serving underserved, rural, tribal, and urban areas, get the relief they need. He is going to reserve half of any new small business relief, whether it's PPP or future efforts for small businesses, for businesses that have 50 employees or fewer, including micro businesses and including sole proprietorships, so that the bigger and more well-connected aren't able to win in a first-come, first-served race. And as President, Biden's technical assistance programs will also help with navigator assistance for these small and minority-owned businesses to ensure that they have access to those programs. So that's an answer to the first question. Now, when it comes to the second question, this is another really great point. We are seeing a transformation in our economy. And if we are going to talk about Black communities and communities of color, we need to think about the ways in which we need to expand access to really be able to bring folks into this new economy of the future. And that's why we have, you know, significant investments that are going to be going into HBCUs and MSIs and other institutions that historically have been committed to, you know, servicing communities of color. And what we want to do is establish intensive semester-long business development programs at every single public community college in the United States, as well as two-year HBCUs, TCUs, and MSIs, minority-serving institutions. And in these intensive programs, many Americans with a business idea who otherwise wouldn't have known how to get it started can get it started. And so that's a huge opportunity. And we also want to create other opportunities to provide that sort of technical assistance and really unleash the full potential of entrepreneurs in communities of color. So there's so much in terms of our investment into education that is directly geared at Black and Brown students and young people and future entrepreneurs to really help them take an idea and incubate it and innovate and turn it into a business.
We've got a question about opportunity zones. Lydia O'Neill, Bloomberg Tax in Arlington, Virginia, asks, what do Seema Jason and former Vice President Joe Biden think of Republicans and the White House's intentions to expand the opportunity zone incentives without reforming them as a way to combat our current economic crisis and its associated economic disparities? Senator Tim Scott and some House lawmakers want to extend investor deadlines, for instance, and other House lawmakers have proposed making every small business affected by COVID-19 an opportunity zone business. Pretty specific question, but if you have any thoughts, it would be great.
Absolutely. Jason, should I take this one?
Yeah. I mean, if I can just start us off, Seema, and then maybe turn it over to you, right? The issue of equity, right, is very central to how we structure the opportunity zones question, right? They need to be, I think, initially, obviously, the way that they were administered, it has to be done with the intention of advancing racial equity. It is now clear that this administration has failed to do that in a thoughtful way that lives up to the promise of making equitable growth accessible to all communities, including communities of color. So thank you for that question. It's a very thoughtful question. It's an important question for us to be discussing. Seema, I don't know if you want to go into additional details, but for us, our incentive, the one thing that I wanted to underscore, as I'm sure my colleague Seema will echo, is the issue of equity. That is our focus here. So thank you for the question. Go ahead, Seema.
I love that framing, Jason, and that's exactly right. You know, the opportunity zones are a good example of a lot of policies that we've seen directed towards revitalizing and creating access for Black communities and Brown communities across the country. And what I can say about it is that opportunity zones, you know, originally were born of good intentions. It was an attempt to find a way to spur new business and apartment buildings and revitalize brownfields. And giving that preferential tax treatment to investors in those endeavors was the idea to incentivize this type of investment. But unfortunately, you know, despite our initial hopes and the vice president's initial hopes that opportunity zones would be structured and administered by the Trump administration in a way that could have advanced real racial equity, small business creation, home ownership, and low-income and rural and tribal communities, what we see now is that, you know, the Trump administration just has failed to deliver on that promise in way too many places across America. And recent studies are showing it's just not living up to the economic and development goals that it had set forth. We just can't close the racial wealth gap if you have, you know, billionaires exploiting opportunity zones to get tax breaks that ostensibly just, you know, bolster their own wealth on the back of the most distressed and low-income communities that are struggling to make ends meet. And so as President, Joe Biden will task his team to develop a plan to reform opportunity zones. And we are exploring and considering all the options on the table, including incentivizing opportunity funds to partner with nonprofit groups to produce a community development plan for every single investment. And that plan needs to focus on creating jobs for low-income residents and providing a direct financial impact for households within the opportunity zone. And the second thing I'll say is that when it comes to opportunity zones, they need to be reviewed by the Department of Treasury. And as President Joe Biden has committed to making sure that they are, to ensure that these tax benefits are not being allowed to happen in a way that do not have a clear economic, social, and environmental benefit to a community, not just high returns like a luxury hotel, you know, for investors. And then finally, we need to increase the transparency. We need to require recipients of opportunity zone tax breaks to provide detailed reporting and public disclosure of their investments and its impact, including poverty status, housing affordability, and job creation. So it's about transparency. It's about incentives. It's about enforcement. And across the board and across this plan, when we think about equity, it's about creating those opportunities, but it's also about enforcing them and creating transparency so that we can make sure that the benefit is going to the distressed communities who need that support in order to be able to really unleash their potential.
We have a question from Jerry Bundle, Stand Hope Advisory Services, Cassopolis, Michigan. What support is planned for local groups who are addressing these issues?
So I think that this question is about the tremendous amount of organizing that has happened to protect the interests of communities of color that have been impacted both by our current economic situation, but also by the racial disparity challenges that our communities have faced long before COVID and long before our current moment. And I think that the idea that we should directly engage and directly listen to and build partnership that is not a one-time thing, but it is a long-term conversation about how we build this thing back up together is a part of sort of the guiding principle of how Joe Biden has ran his campaign, and we're listening. We're listening in a lot of what you see reflected across the board in all four of the pillars of Build Back Better are a reflection of that conversation and giving a platform to local groups on the ground who are organizing and listening to them and learning about what's important to them and coming up with solutions together about how to fix them. I want to pass it over to Jason to talk more about our commitment to continuing to support those groups and engage with them and have conversations to learn.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Seema. That's a really important point, right? All of you have an important perspective to bring to these discussions, whether it's you're participating with one of our local Battleground State roundtable discussions around these issues, whether you're participating by joining one of our policy committees, you all have an important role to play in helping us bring your perspective into the conversation, elevating issues that are happening in your community. You all are on the front lines of what we are facing both with this pandemic, but also with the systemic challenges that we're facing within our economic systems, right? So we want to hear from you. It's why we ask folks here to join us, sign up to receive updates from our campaign. Feel free to reach out to us. We are continuing to work in partnership with Jim and his team and Rhett to filter ideas, thoughts, and perspectives into not only these events, but also into the conversations that we are having internally on what to prioritize next as a part of this. So just want to make sure that folks are joining us for these efforts. So thank you.
Thank you, Jason. One last question. It's about retirement security. We've actually got a few. Could you just walk us through Vice President Biden's plans for promoting retirement security for Black, Brown, and Native American families?
100%. This is a great question because Black and Brown families, and particularly women of color, have faced disadvantages at every single turn when it comes to accessing workplace retirement accounts. And this is incredibly important when it comes to intergenerational wealth and generational wealth. And these disadvantages have really resulted in what we see now is this persistent gap in terms of financial wealth that really lines up across issues of race. And so there are several key components here. One is equalizing the tax benefits of defined contribution plans. The way it stands now is that the current tax benefits for retirement savings are based on a concept of deferral. So a person who is saving gets to exclude when they withdraw money from their account. And the problem with that system is that it basically privileges upper-income families with a much stronger tax break for saving and a limited benefit for middle class and other workers with lower earnings. Joe Biden is going to equalize the benefits across the income scale so that low and middle income workers will also get a tax break when they put money away for retirement. That's a strong incentive to do so. The second thing is that as president, Joe Biden knows that we need to give small businesses a tax break for starting a retirement plan and being able to give their workers the chance to save. as proposed by the Obama-Biden administration, the Biden plan really calls for the widespread adoption of workplace savings plans and offers tax credits to incentivize small businesses to offset much of these costs. Under the Biden plan, almost all workers without a pension or a 401k type plan will have access to an automatic 401k, which will provide the opportunity to save more easily for retirement at work. And that will put millions of middle-class families on the path to a secure retirement. And finally, another innovative idea in the Joe Biden plan is really opening the door for asset managers owned by Black and Brown people. There have been reviews of performance by asset management firms owned by Black and Brown people are consistently equal to or better than the blue chip asset management firms, yet government-led investment pools consistently don't utilize them. And as president, Biden will ensure that the federal government-led investment pools, including pension funds and endowments, will allocate their assets in a manner that reflects the diversity of our country, including the asset management firms owned by Black and Brown people. And Biden will require sales of any government assets to include participation of firms owned by Black and Brown people. So a lot of thought has gone into, you know, creating a pathway and creating the incentive so that we can start to see, you know, retirement and savings be within reach for Black and Brown families across the country.
Thank you, Seema. Thank you, Jason. And thank you, Rhett. And thank you all for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, and Ed Meyer. Produced and engineered by Alexi Lemon and Alex Pastanen. Special thanks to our Director of Programming, Jana Platt. Thanks for listening. See you next time.